gathering here for our collective pursuit of making Vermont's housing more plentiful and more affordable, and ensuring that every Vermonter has a permanent, safe place to call on it. And I'm excited to see that dedication in the room today. Until now, we've often treated housing and homelessness as separate issues, when in truth, they are inextricably linked to each other. And I don't think I need to say that to many of you. There have been, because of that, two independent councils. One, which has really addressed the issues and the situations related to our current housing and units crisis, and the other that's really worked to address homelessness. The two councils have toiled independently and have been tasked each with handling different tasks of the problem, while the overall situation continued to deteriorate on the ground. However, I'm profoundly optimistic as we are here today before us, because these two vital issues are coming together, and we are recognizing the strength and maturity of that collaboration between these joint efforts. It's essential to acknowledge that while homelessness and the affordable housing crisis might appear as a recent challenge, that many of us in this room are well aware that underdevelopment in the housing market has plagued Vermonters for quite a while. And most of you have been working on that for quite some time. Looking back in time, Vermont has a historic track record of underbuilding housing for decades. This chronic underdevelopment has created a compressed market, rendering housing unaffordable for countless Vermonters. We've witnessed our friends and families reluctantly leaving the state because they could no longer afford to live here. We've seen prospective employees choosing other destinations due to the lack of housing and not coming to Vermont. And most heart-wrenching of all, the number of Vermonters of experiencing homelessness or who are at risk of homelessness is growing daily. For each of us, that can be very palpable. It can be our family members who've moved out of state and we're no longer to see our nieces and nephews every day. It can be our brothers and sisters who, when they become divorced, are no longer able to afford their housing and bring their families into homelessness. It can be our children as we look forward with an uncertain future. The neighbors who are experiencing homelessness are enduring unimaginable trauma due to their lack of a permanent, affordable place to call home. And it is our solemn duty to come up with solutions and to come up with them swiftly. Yes, we have unprecedented investments over the last few years. I witnessed growth in housing at an unprecedented rate. But at the current rate, it could take us over 50 years to catch up. For those teetering on the edge of losing their homes and the nearly 2,000 individuals and households currently experiencing homelessness, we cannot afford to wait that long. We need housing solutions today, and in fact, we needed them yesterday. We understand that there is no silver bullet, no single solution. We are in the search for bold, innovative ideas that will augment and reshape our current housing policy, because what we're doing right now is not going to be sufficient for those that we serve and for those coming behind them. Recognizing the sense of urgency, we are operating in this group on a very tight timeline for our first deliverable, and it may feel slightly uncomfortable, and I want to acknowledge that. The tactical action plan is due on December 31st. It is crucial that we clarify that this is not a strategic plan at this point, but instead a plan that lays out our very short-term tactical steps that we can address the issues before us in the next year to next 2 years. And it is not focused on the crisis response that we have in front of us either. Instead, it's a plan aimed at preventing homelessness in the future and addressing our current affordable housing crisis head on with very specific and tactical strategies. From now until December, we must be resolute and action-oriented, driving relentlessly towards consensus, and that's going to be hard. The last time we met as a group to do this, it was very difficult. We understand that there is no one-size-fits-all solution, but rather a multitude of good options that, when brought together, can create meaningful change. We will harness the current public focus on homelessness to shift perceptions. We need people to embrace the ideas of opening their communities to development of new permanent housing solutions. We must strive to return to Vermont, to a Vermont where homelessness, when it occurs, is brief and non-reoccurring, and where housing people in shelters and hotels is an emergency option and not the norm. We need to move beyond searching for someone to blame and instead focus on implementing collaborative and innovative solutions. Once we have developed this tactical action plan focused on what we can do immediately, we will reconvene in the new year to draft a more comprehensive strategic plan. I thank you for your willingness to take this tactical action plan and then a strategic plan. It's worked in several other sectors that we've been working in. In closing, I want to take a moment to recognize all of you in this room and your dedicated teams. You do not receive nearly enough thanks for the tireless work you are doing and that you have been doing for decades, and especially over the last 3 years. We all understand the immense good faith effort that has gone into monumental tasks before us already, and we're actually aware of how much it will take and is needed to accomplish what lies ahead. And now, after what feels like a long time and a challenging journey, we will finally gather in one room as one team with a clear mission to find a way to reduce the number of people who lack the key to put in their front door of their homes. In other words, we are here to give people the reassurance that if you live in Vermont, you can live here with safety and dignity and a roof over your head. I am not only honored, but genuinely excited to join each and every one of you in this vital work. And I want to thank you again for everything you've done and for everything you will do in the years and months ahead.
Thank you, Rob. Morning. I'll say some comments on behalf of Commissioner Hanford and the Department of Housing and Community Development. But I want to acknowledge something that Secretary Samuelson indicated, which I think is really important, which is it's going to be hard to reach consensus on every item, and that's okay because this collection of individuals has a variety of different perspectives, experiences, expertise, and the vision of bringing this group together, combining the two councils that previously existed to make sure that this collection of individuals can come together is because we know we can come forward with very powerful proposals that can actually really move the needle. We've got a lot of folks that are really hurting right now. We've done a lot. We've made historic investments. We've passed some laws that are going to really help folks build more. But we're all sitting here acknowledging it hasn't been nearly enough. So this group of folks is tasked with acknowledging that, working through it, and coming up with solutions together. We're not going to agree 100% on everything, but the proposals that we put forward are really going to be taken seriously by the legislature, by the governor, by this whole administration, and all of us are going to need to work together to execute them. So when I look around, I see service providers, I see funders, I see developers, and I see folks from the administration, everybody all willing to do this work. Jenny said it's not going to be easy. She's right. But that's fine. We know the urgency of this situation. We know the urgency of the problem. We know it's long. We're looking for more solutions. So nobody here wants to rest on their laurels. We all want to work hard. I'm very proud to do this with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. Going third, it's a little difficult here. My thunder has been stolen a little bit, but I'm new to this issue. I'm new to the Agency of Human Services. I'm new to the Department of Children and Families, Department for Children and Families. You can get to that part. I've been on the job for 6 months, and I have seen 100 different solutions thrown out there to how we address this crisis that we're all going through right now. And I think it's worth repeating. that the way we should be looking at this as housing and homelessness tied inextricably together. And it's great to have all of you folks assembled in this room to think of the best ways in which we can address and prevent people from experiencing unsheltered homelessness. And it's good to remind folks as well, I think, that AHS and DCF is the safety net. We don't build housing units. We're there to catch the people who are experiencing crisis and transition them housing as soon as we possibly can. Housing units is the obvious answer, but what we're doing now, while it's progress and we can point to lots of successes, it's not happening at the pace or scale that it needs to adequately meet the need. So I'll repeat the calls for innovation. What are some things that we can come up with that we can recommend to the governor that can move the needle, as Alex said? So I'll leave it at that because we have a lot of work to do and not much time here this morning. I'm going to chair the meeting today. Alex may chair a future meeting as co-chair. I just want to talk a little bit about meeting expectations. We want to embrace diverse points of view here today as a council and in all of our meetings. We want to give everyone an opportunity to express their ideas. With so many efforts and so much to do in a short time, we may have to put limits on how long each of us speak. And we'll strive to conduct these meetings with respect and avoid interruptions. I do want to point out that although we don't have a public comment period listed here, this is subject to open meeting law. We will have an opportunity for public comment. But just like the rest of us, we may need to limit the time that we have for comments. We will show each other respect by paying attention and listening to these meetings while we have this time together. And we have a lot of work to do, so I really look forward to doing it with all of you. Any questions about meeting expectations or the agenda before the first thing you do introductions? And we will ask the folks to raise their hand and be acknowledged before. Thank you. We'll start with introductions. I'll start and then maybe we'll go to the left here. My name is Chris Winters. I'm the new commissioner of the Department for Children and Families. And again, saying I've just come, I'm fairly new to the position with 6 months, and I've just had such an eye-opening experience working with all the people who are so very passionate about the issues of preventing and addressing unsheltered homelessness. I have had the opportunity to visit with a lot of folks out in the GA housing hotels and motels. That was one of the things that I made a priority when I first became DCF commissioner, was to hear directly from probably about 100 households who were experiencing homelessness and what the housing program meant to them and how it was going in the hotels and motels. And that's really kind of shaped my perspective on the work that we're doing here at DCF. And maybe as we go around, we can talk about why you're here, why you're at the table. And if you'd like to share what you'd like to get out of this this council work. Start with Monica.
Thank you, Chris. So my name is Monica White. I am the commissioner of the Department of Disabilities, Aging, and Independent Living, also known as DALE. I'm here for representing the lens of Vermonters with disabilities and older Vermonters. It's certainly probably not a surprise to anyone that we are facing some shifting demographics. We're looking at an increasing number of older Vermonters in the age shift. And from the lens of having the impact of the housing issues on older Vermonters, persons with intellectual and developmental disabilities, persons with physical disabilities, looking to bring a perspective of universal design, aging in place, livable communities, and accessible, inclusive spaces as we look to design solutions to address the issues that are in front of us today.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Mary Moulton. I'm the Executive Director of Washington County Mental Health Services, and I'm not new, I'm old. And I have learned a lot from a lot of the people that are here in this room and up on the screen. As a designated agency, I think I'm here because we innovate, and I hope to be able to share some of those innovations in providing housing and services. Housing is health at the very base for all of us. If we don't have a home, we generally experience some level of stress. And so my experience has been just that. We've developed progressive models of wraparound services to independent housing within the designated agency system. I've worked on public-private partnerships. I've worked within the voucher system. I believe we have some unintended consequences, actually, within the voucher system. I just tried to house two moms and babies and learned that we could use Section 8 housing vouchers in a sublease situation when we wanted to master lease with a landlord. I think these are things we should look at. Where do we have unintended consequences in our system, even if they're federal, which is sometimes a problem? I'd add to that just the impact of flood and working with people on the ground right now. If we just look at Barry, 523 additional units came offline just in Barry. 30 to 35% of the houses in Barry are substantially damaged and may not be available. That adds to our housing crisis, not just for the consumers that we serve, but for our workforce, as Secretary Samuelson was indicating. And we have housed some people within available spots within our buildings when they have come to work for us, but we don't have enough housing for in the world to hurt, and that's why.
Thank you, Mary. And I'm just going to say Monica and Mary did a great job of keeping it fairly brief. If we could have maybe 2 minutes at the most for any one of us, because we do have quite a few people to get through the room.
Well, good morning. I'm Holly Major. I'm the Policy Director for the Vermont Housing and Conservation Board. In the future, you're going to see Jeff Selig here, but he wasn't able to join today. And we're here at this table because we're working with pretty much every agency represented around the table in increasing the supply of permanently affordable housing around the state. And I think one thing that we're excited about in this conversation is the conversation around how we will increase the supply and make sure that the goal isn't just getting people into housing, but ensuring that they're successfully housed and how can we continue down the work the road we've been down in integrating those services with housing over that unit.
Hey everybody, Will Town, I am the Chief Operating Officer at Spectrum Youth and Family Services, and for the last 2 years, lucky enough to be one of the co-chairs of the Chittenden County Homeless Alliance in Burlington. Really excited to be here. I think the last 3 years during this pandemic, we've seen agencies, nonprofits, developers in the state kind of react to this crisis in a nimble way, kind of like we haven't really seen before. I'm excited to continue that effort as the need continues to grow.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kim Ansberger. I'm the Executive Director of the Vermont Community House, where I'm a shelter in Hyde Park. I've been doing homeless response work for about 6 years or so now, and starting with case management work, now in leadership over the last few years. And one of the things that I'm hoping to get out of this, or that I see, is an experience with other service providers, just to take the feeling of kind of hopelessness that there is among service providers, and just feeling like you're kind of spinning your wheels in mud and not really moving anywhere. And as I've shifted roles, I've seen, you know, opportunities for, or I see this as an opportunity for kind of figuring out and strategizing with how I'm going to get kind of the mud. And my efforts have kind of moved more towards those type of initiatives and that's
interesting. Thank you. My name is Chad Vijay. I'm the CEO of Recovery House, which is a substance use disorder treatment organization serving the entire state. Also the president of the Vermont Substance Use Treatment Collaborative. If you look at the Venn diagram of homelessness and SUD population, there's considerable overlap. So I come from a lens of wanting to make sure that housing options we have are permanent and serve a population that struggles greatly. In addition to that, I sit on the select board for the town of Fairhaven, so I come from a macro lens in looking at how the housing situation impacts both of mine. So I'm going to use both of those lenses to help me in the.
My name is Zach Hale. I'm partner and CEO of Hale Resources. We're a real estate development and property management company in Bennington, Vermont. I'm also on the board of the Bennington County Coalition for the Homeless. And we currently have about 30 MEGA units and about 50 Section 8 tenants across our 200-unit portfolio. We have a couple hundred units in our pipeline and coming up with those innovative ideas to bring housing online and work with service providers to make sure that people are supporting the outcomes. So, we're working with them.
Good morning. I'm Kathleen Burke. I'm the Executive Director of the Vermont State Housing Authority. We have long-standing relationships with many, many people in this room, administering a variety of very innovative, successful programs. But that said, I've been in the business for 35 years, and I have never encountered such a challenging time as we're working through today. And so I'm at the table today in hopes of developing innovative, creative solutions to ending homelessness and creating affordable housing for.
Good morning. I'm Patrick Shelley. I'm the Executive Director of Rural Edge. We're a nonprofit housing organization serving the Northeast. We have a portfolio of about 700 units in the most rural area of the state. We have got a robust pipeline, and we are looking to stand up the first homeless shelter for the kingdom in the next 60 days. We know we're in crisis situation. We've seen our portfolio go from 15% of folks moving in from homelessness to our currently at 42%. With that comes a whole lot of stresses in operating. You know, how we make sure that people not only have housing, but are successful in that. How we make sure that our larger communities are successful and embracing and work together to really have good solutions. So I'm excited to be here with so many people I've worked with before and want to build the new relationships.
Hi, I'm Maura Collins. I'm the Executive Director of the Vermont Housing Finance Agency. Like Chris said, going later in the line, that a lot of the needs and acuity have been said. VHFA has historically been on the Housing Council, at least since it was formed originally many decades ago. And we've always been on the Homeless Council. I, in fact, remember when the Interagency Council on Homelessness was kickstarted in the early 2000s after a federal initiative asked us to do so in Vermont. So I've been following this work for the 21 years I've been at the agency, and I'll say that there are a lot of good ideas that we had 20-plus years ago that we never fully realized that still hold true and seem to be our sticky widgets that we just can't seem to address, like the chronic undersupply of housing that Secretary Samuelson spoke to. We saw this brick wall was coming at us 20 years ago and did not make different decisions as a state. And yet, as Kathleen just said, the acuity, the concerns on the housing providers, the needs that people with challenges like substance use or mental illness or the others has never been like this before, never been so great. And so I appreciate both the urgency of our task ahead, but also the then need to slow down and look strategically about how do we actually change things once and for all and do things a bit differently, which is going to be very uncomfortable for all of us who have gotten used to this way of operating over the last many decades.
Kristen, can I get a little help with online folks?
Yes.
And we have four council members online.
Actually, Dave is presenting right now. Sorry, jumping back and forth.
So if you folks wouldn't mind, if you're on the council, could you do a hand raise for the folks who are online and we'll put them in the list just following you? Monica, go ahead. Sorry, stop.
Yeah, thanks. Good morning, everybody. Monica Hutt, I'm the Chief Prevention Officer for the state of Vermont, and I sit in the governor's office. I don't know that I can add anything terribly profound to all that's already been said. I will just say that when you think about prevention and prevention strategies, it starts with all of our social determinants of health, and we know that housing is core. So certainly that is a reason for me to be on this council. I also am really appreciative of the opportunity to kind of take on this crisis. I think that Maura is right. We've been talking about this for a long time, and the urgency, I think, is actually critical to making sure that we can make some build some strategies and address it in a way that makes sense right now going forward. So thanks.
Thank you, Monica. Commissioner Hawes?
Hi, good morning. I don't have much further to add either. This is Emily Haas, Commissioner for the Department of Mental Health. And I think it's clear we all have a shared goal to work across departments, both state departments as well as community resources, and to think a little creatively. I also know that when we think creatively, we all have to dig down deep to also do that within ourselves and be comfortable doing things that we might not have wanted to do in previous conversations to address folks who are unhoused. But I think all of our goal is to support Vermonters and our communities. And from a DMH lens, that's certainly very important to us as, you know, we navigate a system of both community resources up to the highest level of hospital resources. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. Commissioner Harrington.
Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Terrific. So, hi, my name is Michael Harrington. I'm the commissioner for the Vermont Department of Labor. I think I'll just echo what everyone said about the importance of identifying individuals that are struggling with housing or homelessness and how do we work with them. I think the piece that I would say for the Department of Labor is that we know that employment is an essential piece to that stable environment that folks need. Here at the department, our largest division is actually our workforce development division, and we have offices across the state. We're also working on what's known as our WIOA state plan currently, which is the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, which is a federal program. And a lot of the folks here in the room and online are core partners in that work. And there are parts of our core state plan that will focus on housing and homelessness and how to address those issues while we work with folks to help either grow their skills and find careers or link them with good paying jobs and employers. So I've also asked our Director of Workforce Development, Jay Ramsey, to join as well, and our Principal Assistant, Rowan Hawthorne, because this is such a critical role for us, and we have partnerships with a lot of the folks already around the table. So thank you for having us.
Thank you. Anyone else online who is a council member who I may have forgotten? I think we got all the council members. We'd also like to give an opportunity for folks to go around the room or in the virtual room. Maybe we can start online. There's a lot of people on there. Please raise your hand, emoji hand, if you would like to introduce yourself, why you're here, if you have any expectations for the council within 1 minute or less, please. Anyone online?
Jay Ramsey.
Good morning. As the commissioner just said, I'm Jay Ramsey. I am the Director of Workforce Development at the Department of Labor, and I'm listening with an ear toward partnerships and opportunity. So we are working on the WIO estate plan and trying to engage partners that we haven't historically engaged to include people in the workforce.
Thank you, Jay. Jessica Hyman.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Jess Hyman. I'm with CVOEO, the Champlain Valley Office of Economic Opportunities Statewide Housing Advocacy Programs, which includes Vermont Tenants, the Fair Housing Project, the Mobile Home Program, as well as the Home Family Voucher Rapid Rehousing Program. I'm also here wearing my Housing and Homelessness Alliance of Vermont hat, which is a brand new organization, which was recently formed by as a merger of the Vermont Coalition to End Homelessness and the Vermont Affordable Housing Coalition, two longstanding organizations representing the majority of the state's housing and homelessness organizations, nonprofits, and providers. And I'm here today because I'm really excited about this council's work, and I'm looking forward to this work continuing in a spirit of collaboration and coordination. And I want to make sure that the work the council is doing is informed by all the folks doing the work on the ground, which it seems to be, and that also that we're finding solutions in a collaborative and coordinated way, and so that the work of this council can build on work that's already happened around the state, that the new alliance is doing, and that all these other groups are doing. So that's all I'll say for today. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you, Jess. Anyone else online?
Commissioner Winters, if I can just toss out one name that I don't see that she's joined yet, but I want folks to be aware of, because you see her around at these meetings quite a bit, is the Agency of Commerce's Legislative and Policy Director, Jessica Bindner, will be joining, I think, later today, and then you'll see a lot of her later on.
Great to hear from us. Go ahead.
I unmuted now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, everybody. So glad you're there and focusing on this problem. I'm the co-director of the Good Samaritan Haven, and I just want to say at the ground level, this is a very, very challenging problem. We're doing everything we can, but there are at least three disturbing trends that I'm seeing, and I've been in the housing field in Vermont for 30 years. One, the scale of need just keeps growing, and that's both people in the shelter and on the streets. And it's particularly difficult to reach people who are unsheltered. Secondly, the age of folks that are coming to the shelter is something that I never have seen before. And that presents a whole set of challenges that very often we are ill-equipped to deal with. And then lastly, and related to that, is the complexity of needs. You know, just folks have a whole array of needs often, and it's really hard to address that at the shelter level, at the ground level. So really looking forward to your focus on this and the directives and recommendations that you come up with to help us. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Last call for any folks online. Okay, we'll turn to the room. Representative Wood, would you like to start? And anyone else, will go right down the table.
Sure, thank you. Good morning. My name is Representative Teresa Wood. I'm chair of the House Human Services Committee and a member of the Joint Fiscal Committee. I am the lead person in the House on the General Assistance Program, as well as sort of the overall homelessness issue. I'm here really to listen and learn, as well as to represent the fact that the legislature really wants to be active partners with all of you around the table and on Zoom in finding solutions for housing and homelessness issues. So thank you for having me.
Hard to follow that. Hi, I'm Beverly Bogat. I'm from the Vermont Early Childhood Advocacy Alliance. And I'll just be brief to say that I just want to add perspective and listen for all of the conversations around how housing and homelessness is maybe impacting families and children.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Plummer from Vermont Legal Aid. We work with a lot of Vermonters who are experiencing homelessness or are in danger of becoming homeless. And we're deeply involved in creating and advocating for strategies to stabilize rental housing in particular, preventing eviction when possible, and helping people get out of homelessness as quickly as possible, both of which are obviously really intertwined with the huge lack of safe and affordable housing. So happy to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. Go Earhart and then.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Monica with Senator Bernstein's office. I'm an outreach representative for the Senator covering housing, homelessness, veterans affairs, and municipal and a few other issues. Senator obviously has a longstanding interest in housing. He comes from a position that housing is a basic human right, and that is absolutely intolerable that this nation has close to 600,000 people that are homeless on any given night, and that we in Vermont have over almost 3,300 that were counted last one time count. So I'm here basically to offer the center's support in any way that we can to help the state alleviate this dual crisis of housing and homelessness. So I'll just add, the center's obviously been very, very focused on recovery for the state and recovery from the catastrophic flooding, which, as many have mentioned, has absolutely exacerbated both our housing need and our housing crisis. And, has been working all summer with President Biden, with Senate leadership, Senate appropriators, to help bring to bear as many resources as we can to help the state.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Dave Riegel. I'm the Director of Housing Policy and Planning for the Agency for Human Services. I'm really grateful to be here with all of you. I'm a firm believer that diverse perspectives and a group of talented folks like this one is what it will take to really make a difference in this space. I respect the challenges that the work presents, but I think along with that come some opportunities to affect real change and to help people. So with that, I'll pass over to Sean.
All right. Good morning, everyone. My name is Sean Gilpin. I'm the director of the housing division at the Agency of Commerce. It's great to see a lot of familiar faces. Also very excited about meeting some new folks in this spirit of collaboration and new work to address problems that have been going on for a long time. My small but mighty housing team will be assisting this council and working with many of you guys to make sure that we come to some productive, successful ends.
Hi, everyone. I'm Netta Horsler. I am a new staff member with Sean. I work as an administrative services coordinator for the Department of Housing Development. I was born and raised in the Northeast Kingdom and have worked and served in a multitude of roles and both jobs and leadership, volunteerism, leadership opportunities. The issue of our housing crisis and the complexity of it has been sort of a theme throughout all of that. And I just really look forward to working with all of you to come up with solutions for our fellow Vermont.
I'm Lily Swifterner of the Office of Economic Opportunity. I think folks are aware that Sarah Phillips, this is her last week as director of our office. So I will be supporting our office and the commissioner. I think over the past few years, as well as that, I've seen folks really come together and face a lot of things that looked hard and actually impossible, and then do things and make things possible. And so I look forward to the work of this group, and I'm sure this is a group that can face this hard thing and find ways to move forward.
Good morning, everyone. We're Andrew Gray, the Deputy Commissioner for Economic Services Division. We're the General Assistance Emergency Assistance Housing Program. I'm also equally excited to be in this room, getting to meet a lot of people that I haven't had the opportunity to meet yet, and to build relationships with and find solutions. So thank you for having me be here, and happy to provide any information that Economic Services might have.
Chris, can I just jump in? I should have said, when not at work, I'm on the board and have been for the last 12 years of Pathways Vermont, which is a specialized services agency doing the housing first model in the state. I just felt like I should say I'm still doing that as well and as much for disclosure as anything else. Thanks.
All right. Did we miss anybody? We should say thank you, Kristen. Hello. Keep us out of trouble.
Sorry about the video.
It's all right. Yeah. Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you.
Wow. Just such an amazing amount of skill and experience in this room and so many different perspectives to tackle the issue of our times right now here in Vermont, an issue that runs through everything we do. So really appreciate that everybody has made the time to be here by the council or in this room right now. And we are 10 minutes ahead of schedule, so that bodes well, I think, for our work here. Next up on the agenda is the long and short-term efforts and the strategic planning that we need to do for that. Hope we've had a chance to look at the executive order creating this council. If not, I recommend you take a minute to do that and have a moment. The council, and I'm going to read from the council's charge and process, that the council shall have the following duties and responsibilities. By December 31st of this year, the council shall deliver to the governor a tactical action plan outlining annual strategies, specific tactics, and measurable annual performance metrics to ensure affordable housing options exist for all Vermonters at all income levels. So that's the task immediately in front of us over the next 3 months. The tactical action plan shall include a reasonable inventory of public and private sector rehabilitation and development in Vermont, annual achievable targets for meeting the need for supply and affordability in all 14 counties with priority given the counties that have experienced the most significant demographic declines, proposals to expedite revitalization of our housing supply, specific and measurable interventions to reduce the number of Vermonters becoming homeless each year, and plans to achieve specific, clearly defined, and measurable annual performance metrics for all key strategies, tactics, or plans. That's the short-term tactical action plan by the end of the year. And then it goes on to say that no later than September 30th of every year of this executive order, develop an annual progress report on its key performance metrics and modifying tactical plans going forward, and recommend to the governor state and federal policies to improve a housing availability, and to improve housing availability, affordability, and stability. Questions or comments about our immediate and long-term charge? And in doing this work, we propose that there be a couple of subcommittees. And maybe we could get the slideshow back up, Kristen or Dave. Thank you. Slides back up there. Go to slide 3. And actually, we'll go to slide. This is some of the language that I was just reading. You can see from the 1231 deliverable, we have two major pieces of this. I think that what we could call the housing side and the homelessness side of the issue. And the thought is to create a couple of subcommittees, two subcommittees to work on each of these pieces of the problem. One being the inventory of public and private sector rehabilitation and development, and the other being specific and measurable interventions to reduce the number of Vermonters becoming homeless each year. Those subcommittees would do that work and come back to this council to inform the tactical action plan for the year.
Chris, would each of those two subcommittees then do the last words of that sentence that's not highlighted? Like, each of them would have plans to achieve the defined and measurable performance metric?
I think that's right. Okay. Yeah. The highlight is to define the scope of each of the subcommittees. And the final sentence, or the final section, does questions there. So it's a pretty big charge to get to that by the end of the year. Like everyone to start thinking about which of these subcommittees you'd like to be a part of. The executive order doesn't limit it just to council members. We can invite and appoint other stakeholders to the subcommittees. The only limitation being that the number of outside the council participants cannot outnumber the council participants on the subcommittees. I think we would, once the subcommittees are formed, can we leave it up to the subcommittees and their chairs to determine the number of meetings, meeting cadence, location, and amount of time to accomplish the work by the end of the year. We should I think, start framing out what it would look like for this council to meet and for the subcommittees to meet. And open to suggestions from anyone here, so how we start that.
And maybe I can toss them in the proposal and just see how the council reacts to it. One thought is we've got this looming deadline, and some committees will have to meet with some regularity, but once there's some draft from each subcommittee, I think it would be good to bring the whole council back together in November, review what each subcommittee has put together. I assume both teams would want to have some say with the others put together to then spend the next few weeks going back to work and then have another meeting in December. So the full council, my recommended meeting cadence would be one in November, one more in December, some leeway, the December meetings would be still making final edits before the 12th meeting. Yeah, just that.
I think the subcommittees might need some is it weekly? Is it every two? I mean, there's a need to get our calendar scheduled up.
And perhaps it would be helpful to know, I mean, it's noted on the slide, but Commissioner Winters, Secretary Sanderson's team will, with the help of David over there, be leading the homelessness prevention team, and then as far as housing development, the staffing would be done by my team. So as far as logistics, that they lent some support there. So if, you know, perhaps bi-weekly meetings of subcommittees would be sufficient, some legwork could be done in-house by, you know, by the administrative staff. That's helpful.
Maybe the staff
could
be chartered or, you know, each of these so we could have sense and maybe where we best or will we be developing?
It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, okay.
So maybe it would happen with the moving assistance of the subcommittees. So it, as Alex has proposed, I think probably sometime in mid-November back with the full council and to have recommendations from the subcommittee. So we're talking about 6 to 8 weeks of work, what are we, 7 weeks between now and then. So it does seem that weekly might be the appropriate cadence, and then taking those meetings off if they're not necessary. We will certainly facilitate online participation, so we're not asking people to come to libraries this week or anywhere else. That's the only proposed.
Are you hoping it will volunteer for a certain subcommittee, or are you committing it? Or are we even checking the end of the meeting?
That's right. They can step forward.
And, you know, quick note, they just thought, you and your team, Kathleen, and, Chris is on the table. You know, same really for everybody. I can see a world in which possibly BSHA might want to participate both. So, you know, you or somebody from your team can be in one, and then you as a council member can get together. So, just want all the, just keep that in mind.
That's right. We've been talking about, you know, bringing these two issues together, arm in arm, and not get one split of people focused on housing on one committee and people focused on another. We want diversity opinions at each of these So I think it's, so feel free to volunteer to vote. Or someone from your organization. Again, we can appoint people outside of groups.
And why don't we, maybe starting just with council members and then non-council members, we can follow up, but afterward, contact us. But maybe just, why don't we start with Lewis to be on the homelessness intervention right off the bat.
I'll designate
a
staff member.
Okay.
Awesome. Can you keep
your hands up to Chris and Kathleen? Name, please. Will tell. Kathleen, Burke. I think staff from the SHA, that Kathleen later in the term.
Okay. And a staffer from the HCB as well. Probably me.
I saw another hand with a beard.
I would also like to have a staff member.
Your name?
Zach Hale.
And knowing that any one of the either one of the subcommittees can pull people into the conversation at any time, especially council members, need to have something, you know, related to Department of Mental Health or whatever it might be. Emily Haas will be the person who could either be here or provide something to be there to inform the decision. As an example, Emily.
Right.
Did anyone online want to volunteer for the homelessness? I didn't see any hands, but thank you.
And then maybe just while we're on it, outside of the council members, anyone in the room or in the virtual room who wants to bring their stakeholder expertise into the conversation? All right, that's we're down the road there, Wilkerson.
Beverly
Bogan. Recently. And Monica Huck from online said she'd like to speak.
Thank you.
Our chief prevention officer in the one of the prevention team.
And Kristen, Dale, so, you know, myself for one of my teams and Dale. For both.
Then should we also now capture the housing development subcommittee?
Sorry, is that Kathleen Burke? Mara Collins.
And Jeff Seelig.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's Bergman.
Okay, and either online or in the room? On the housing side of things. Teresa
Wood. You know, not Teresa Wood, I'm going to. But I'm going to tentatively just represent Tom Stevens. But I haven't asked him.
I don't know if Commissioners Harrington or Haas want to sign up now or wait on it, but in the meantime, I'm going to designate a couple of my team members over there, and they'll, of course, join us.
I think from Labor's perspective, we were chatting offline here, but we could see a role in either housing development. There is a role for training and education, for employment purposes, but also on the prevention side, helping people connect with employers to prevent homelessness is a role. So We'll talk on our end. It may be that we could have representation on both, but there are funds available for upskilling and training in the trades to encourage more contractors and housing development. So we'll circle back with everybody.
Kristen, do you think you have a documented list? We actually need to do this a little more formally, and we can have a motion to create a subcommittees.
I have a pretty good list. It's going to help me make sure that I've got everyone's there.
I think we may also want to leave this open to do a little more recruitment once we look at the composition of each of these committees and see where we might have a few gaps.
To Mary's question of charter charge, I know that the executive order lays out largely the goal of each, but I wonder what you think. When I think about these efforts, mostly on the housing development side, I'm thinking of complementary, similar planning initiatives that would inform and influence both the tactical plan and the strategic plan that would follow. On the housing development side, I'm thinking of the fact that the state's about to do its housing needs assessment that happens every 5 years, which requires housing projection numbers for every county. And in addition, S-100 this year required that as a part of that, the Department of Housing, through the housing needs assessment, has to sort of set these high-level targets for housing development for regions of the state, to which then the regional planning commissions and local municipalities would have further steps to show how they would implement those goals, targets. I haven't been told what word I should use there, but so don't get scared when I say those words. That's one example. We also know that there's monthly reporting to the legislature on housing and homelessness response. And so I guess I would hope that each committee would take a little time to brainstorm the complementary efforts that are going on that may not have the same December 31 deadline, but still we don't want to recreate these efforts. And we need to be realistic about what is going to be possible by December versus what is a major state contract to do a housing needs assessment, which really kind of gets at that technical plan that this executive order calls for.
I think we could at least get each other's minutes. You know, it would be helpful to be informed that way. So if we can catch something, if we in fact are creating redundancy in our conversations and know that we need to get together, that would be one thing.
I think it's a great point that we're having to focus on the short term while looking at the long term, and that's going to be challenging, confusing, and complicated at times, I think. So maybe we could just stay on the housing side for the moment. Like, other items you want to put into the agenda for that or the scope of the charge for that subcommittee? Here's some ideas from the towns. We have the language in the executive order, but are there other things that you'd like to call out as part of the charge to inform the tactical action?
So one of the things I've been doing is working with the Bennington Housing Commission Committee to do both. Actually, the proposals for this meeting are revitalization in both those counties, and we have come up with a list of policy changes that we could see that could help with housing development, but those are only two counties, and so maybe there would be ways to get input from other housing committees from different counties across the state. That would be valuable.
Any other thoughts on the housing subcommittee?
Can I just ask? With regard to the inventory that's noted that will be brought forward, is that something that the committee members are going to be asked to reach out to the regions and get, or will that be presented through the through AHS. So when we look at an inventory, you know, there's an inventory of public and private sector we have in the government. So the tactical action plan will include that. Right. So is that something that the committee will develop or that will be brought forward? Will we be asking there to work for that from our housers? Mm-hmm. I'd be reaching out to downstream to say, what are your current plans? What's happening? Can you ask some of the housing going on in our region? I'm just wondering if the charter should reflect that that particular work needs to be done by members.
Or can I point out two things? I think you're talking about the specific work, but I also want to point out something else that you just brought up from this outside of that question, which is that each of your organizations represents a group of organizations. And we can discuss that right from the beginning, but as you come to the table, one of your goals and roles is to connect with your peers across the state. You're representing your own opinions, but you're also representing the opinions of, if you go through the executive order, of the organizations that you are representing. So, Mary, since you're the one who brought it up, I just want to pick on you a little bit. As we look here, and not to prevent other people from speaking up, but it's a valid point. As we look here in the executive order, you are one of the executive directors of the Mental Health Designated Agency. I would ask that, as a representative, that we draw both from your experiences and from the experiences of your peers. So I want to make sure that we point out both of those parts of your question, which was, should I be drawing from my peers, and is this specific information going to come from the folks who are chairing it, ACCD, AHS, or from the council members themselves. And again, they're both important questions. One is that there is an expectation that folks are there drawing from and getting feedback from the folks in your representative.
I have a logistical question that is highly political. Which is, I serve on some councils that are advisory to the governor's administration, picking up the Community Development Advisory Board, where we all reach consensus, and thankfully every administration has always gone with that consensus, and the governor does what that board advises. But any governor would not have to, because the governor decides how to move forward in that case with that money. There's other times when you're on a council and it's a vote of the majority of the council, and there is no, dare we say, veto power of the administration. It is the power of the council to make recommendations. And I'm curious which model, or maybe there's a third way, with every hope in meeting number one that we would reach consensus and it won't be perfect, but we will all hold hands and be unified. But is this, since it comes from an executive order, is this advising the administration on these matters? Or is this deciding that by the bodies that were named to the executive order, we now decide? And that's why you're saying, like, the majority of the members of the committee have to be council members, because they're actually going to vote, and should the terrible day come that it becomes a majority question. Because honestly, when I look at some of these recommendations, again, only 20 years history, I have a hard time seeing that some of these recommendations wouldn't come with some resource direction and prioritization that may not be in alignment with whatever the governor's next budget.
Excellent question. I'm not 100% certain of the answer, but the executive order does say recommends to the governor state and federal policies to improve the housing availability for the disability. I would assume that we do not have ultimate decision making authority or spending the.
That's fine. I think that's really helpful. I'm someone who gets uncomfortable when we haven't named the thing.
Yeah, no, it's good.
So I think that's really helpful to
Laura, do I also in this question here a two-part, which is how do we as a council deal when the council members themselves we aren't in alignment and consensus? And as Chris said, I know that it's a question that both you and Alex have talked about, and I wonder if I can service that.
Yeah, so I mean, this is something we've talked about. I think because we're trying to capture a variety of viewpoints, I think we can always leave open the opportunity. Let's say there is a death split, or there can be sort of a dissenting opinion, so to speak, if there's something that maybe the whole group couldn't get on board with. We can always still name certain items that perhaps can rise to the top for the whole group, but we're still working on it.
And so circling back to the charge for the housing subcommittee, you could break it down into three parts that are highlighted in green, which is inventory, annual targets, meeting the need, and proposals to expedite revitalization of our housing senior. Those are really big buckets. And I just want to make sure there's a chance here today for anyone else to name something they think ought to be included there, specifically called out before we turn this over to the subcommittee to do with as a group.
I didn't slip March test, but I'm imagining it'd be important for the housing committee to look at the availability of contractors, electricians, plumbers, the folks who are going to carry out this recommendation, because they're doing all the resources.
As we're inventorying housing, we're often talking about support across the transitional housing shelter, urban affordable housing, market rate housing. To what extent do we want to delineate between the different types of housing at the parking there?
Kristen, capture these in minutes. And not there. Are there any, Kristen, can you tell me, are there any folks online raising their hands, or?
I don't see anyone raising their hands. I don't know.
Thanks, sure. I see a message there from Monica asking to repeat those. So on the housing side, from the executive order, it's three pieces. A reasonable inventory of public and private sector rehabilitation and development in Vermont. The second piece, annual achievable targets for meeting the need for supply and affordability in all 14 counties, priority given to the counties that experience the most significant demographic declines. And third, proposals to expedite revitalization of our housing supply. And then in the room, availability of contractors and resources, and then the different types of housing within these categories.
Can I just ask, I know we see the screen, are you sharing the screen so that those online can see what we see on the?
Yes.
Oh, okay. They see it.
They should be able to see Teams. Do we still want this slide up, or would you like to go back to the chat?
I think this is good. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you for all over.
Yep.
Okay. So far, we have 12 members. So, all right. Thank you, Kristen. Has put into the chat the subcommittee members on the Housing Development Subcommittee: Zach Hale, Catherine Burke, Patrick Shattuck, Ron Collins, Gus Seely, Kim Yannisberger, Tom Stevens, as volunteered by her representative, Sean Gilpin, Netta, what's your last name?
Horsler.
And Commissioner Harrington, we're designated.
I think I'd also like to have some advice.
Great. Anyone else on the Housing Development Subcommittee? Invite any stakeholders in the room again? Anyone? Yeah.
I'm just wondering if there's a way that people that weren't able to make this meeting aren't able to sign up or learning. I don't know if we're recording this and or this PowerPoint will become be available to others. Is there a website for this interview?
And this is being recorded.
Officially constitute the housing subcommittee. That's good. We can take a motion.
I'll move it. Maura Collins is moving the creation of the housing subcommittee. Nothing to help.
Second. I'll move that back. Back to the second.
All right, I'll keep it on with it. All right, being no further discussion on that, all in favor of the creation of the Housing Development Subcommittee as constituted by Chris, you say aye.
Aye.
All right, you may have this look at.
Excellent. So now we'll move over to the Homelessness Prevention Subcommittee. And if we could, Kristen, go back to the charter. The executive order. Yeah. Much shorter charge here, and this one, specific and measurable interventions to reduce the number of Vermonters becoming homeless each year. Volunteers for that subcommittee, we have Will Town, Mary Moulton, BSHA designee, VHCB designee, Chad, Zach, Rebecca, Beverly, Teresa Ward, Monica Hutt, a Dale Quincy, and a Department of Labor Quincy.
Chris, may I add to you? We'll be asking both the Department of Health and for their services.
Okay, any discussion about the charge of this committee? Anything anyone here in the room would like to call out around specific and measurable interventions to reduce the number of Vermonters becoming homeless each year?
That's a clarifying question.
Sure.
It says to reduce the number becoming homeless. I assume this is also looking at the population that is already.
I'd make that assumption as well. We obviously will focus a lot on prevention, but there's also existing problems with users.
And I also think kind of it is tied into this already, but becoming homeless and re-entering.
David, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I was just going to point out that I think this goal for the deliverable at 1231 is looking at preventing homelessness. And I think to Will's point, people reentering homelessness. And I think once we sort of zoom out at the beginning of 2024 and start to look at the broader scope of the council, that may be an opportunity to be looking at those who are currently experiencing homelessness. And that could even potentially be another body's work if the council so chooses.
That's a good point, David. And it's a great reminder that we're all have seen what's happening today on the streets, in hotels, across Vermont. But there's nothing, very little that we are going to do as a council between now and 1231 to address the immediate. And we need to be thinking much longer term. This is the space for us as a group of many people with a lot of experience and skill and perspectives to do some longer-term planning, to do some of that thinking and that creative and innovative thinking. Thank you, David, and thank you both. Any other comments about the homelessness subcommittee charge?
Just a question. I don't see anyone here from the Agency of Education, but I wonder if a specific subset or subtask of that committee would be looking at interventions for youth homelessness. I think the reasons that they become homeless might be somewhat different than the regular population.
Kristen, can you tell me?
That was Jay Ramsey.
Jay Ramsey. Thank you, Jay. Good point. We could invite someone from the AOD world. Unless you have someone in mind, Jay.
I don't have anyone in mind, but there is a person at the agency that works on McKinney-Vento.
Yeah.
It's Katie Preston.
Yeah.
Thank you. You get that, Christopher? Any other thoughts on the homelessness prevention subcommittee charge?
I think one reason I raised that in the prevention or the existing population is we've been asking ourselves, what is the right size for the shelter system in Vermont and what do we need that to be? So as the housing development subcommittee is looking at how many housing units do we need, I think we need more clarity on what is the right size for our shelter system and what does that need to look like to make sure people are not just homeless and not attached to the shelter.
Is there any other comment or discussion here? Entertain a motion to constitute the Homeless Prevention Subcommittee members. Read off.
I'll make the motion.
Is there a second?
Zach.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. And unanimous again. Thank you. Any work we've done today? Yeah, so we have 30 minutes to go left in our scheduled time here today. This would be a great time to take some public comment to help give us an outside perspective, what you hope to see from this committee's work and the subcommittee's work. Any other public comment that you'd like to make at this time? So we'll open it up for public comment. Either raise your hand online or in person here in the room. Kristen, can you tell me if someone does? You don't have any public comment then? Put it up to the council. Is there anything you want to bring up here before we get our work started? Go ahead, Mayor Hart.
Sorry, not a member of the council. We didn't want to take up time in the public comment. I just wanted to say, obviously, we're not going to be able to participate in subcommittees that meet on a weekly basis, but are here as resources for those subcommittees. So if, I know Miles McGurman from Senator Welch's office and David Scherer from Congressman Val's office weren't able to attend today, but I think I speak for, all of us that we're here as a resource as those subcommittees meet and have any questions around federal issues, funding, regulation, if any standing in the way that can help. So just please, I think everybody knows, most people here in the room know how to get in touch with me. We're on the distribution list as well, so please feel free to contact us.
Thank you. And I think as a matter of follow-up, Kristen, I think we'll be in touch with scheduling meetings.
Yes.
So we'll send out some information on that to try to get everybody together on the day that works for the most people on the subcommittees. That logistical nightmare will be Kristen's. Do our best to make that work for everybody.
Commissioner Winters, if folks don't have anything for the full group, I suggest that maybe we break out into subcommittees just briefly here to start laying the groundwork for some logistics and planning.
That makes some sense while we're all here. Great. All right. Thank you, everyone. Appreciate you being here again. Let's get started.
Thanks.
I didn't expect to see that that was standard.
Yeah.
We're all excited.
No
other
questions. And the top of the team has to do to the next part. We want to hear that. 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 We will not be done by December 31st. And so to reach this, you always want to rewrite this.
Yeah, that was in my back. So, you know, we're building some successful things and start to talk a little bit more about some of the strategies that have been supposed to be in the works.
And then we get more robust, better, but like more analysis. And then we show that it's 2,000.
A lot of people come out for that. We didn't get.
If it goes down, if it goes up, you're like, okay, it's more advocacy. Really, if it goes down, because I can be like, oh, see, we're honest, he's not in there to eat it. Nothing could be worse. So I'm not sure if my schedule, I know that's not the most important thing you're doing, but as you can see, that it's doing has to be assessment, has
some little some things for
that. Compare some numbers that then my team comes out with that aren't right, or the
Amish is maybe these are engaged, like they might even double or everybody is stretched. I'll try to address several who having this group of people spend too much time on work and having some more how we put a however, we could see it being
somebody if there's a shack ceremony people want to. Another thing I would like to say is that we know in house we're gonna use the work. So maybe that we can take such more confident and bring like our opportunity thing while we don't have say what inventory is, what your needs are. Here are the data that we look at and you all use excuse or anything this other than almost the next look at is similar in age. And I did testimony this last year, no one can tell you. There were people, some folks who did the law, so that we would tell the
30,000 to 40,000 units needed by 2030. And then just sort of walk through the methodology of how you get to a super place. And then say they're all messing with that happens to be your life. But those would be some discussions that I very much welcome feedback to, because I don't think that we are the only ones who do that. If you all could say, you know, it's not your experience or whatever, and we could kind of talk about the methodology. We don't want to promise that we can have some improvements on this, but I think that this could be a service.
I want to focus on the short term. Yeah. Yes, that would be great. We also can say, like, this is the goal, but, like, just some things that we can measure and see on, just to engage them.
Although we are moving into people in the coffin, but by certainly
ratios are not a kind of jobs to homes ratio that's below this. We don't want there is a jobs.
I'm not sure everybody, some people here probably miss it, but maybe not everybody has. It gives an update on the specific cohort for
inventory.
It gives you also sort of a sense geographically about where people are.
That's great.
There's a lot of information on this because I guess GCF keeps up to date on a regular basis. I can definitely help with something.
I will include that in the chat now, and then also we'll have the ACT-81 report coming to that on Wednesday. Go if we support the breakfast group committee, and that includes more information. More so with the specifics of the cohort does. How many people are coming into the general assistance?
I think we also have an opportunity to think of Vermont's experience in homelessness that I did think about. So the General Assistance Emergency Housing Program is one thing that comes forward. How they escape the net system just supports the experience in homelessness. But HMS and the meeting together with the wording of the system is really seems to be the crisis response system in our services communities. So I think one thing that might help us to understand the situation in a more holistic way is to try to figure out how do we take the information that we have from PCF and
after insertion to
how the capacity we have to bring this information through HMIS and a lot of community partners that are doing this work,
We didn't really just come to the molasses. The folks in terms of those numbers, and I think the charge, what it really gets at, and this is probably one of the longer term components of it, is around the fact that there's more people out there than homelessness and than our exit. It's across the population market. And it's not because the system is so like, it's not because units aren't coming on any faster than they've ever come on empty. And it's not because our community partners are engaging with people in greater numbers than they ever have. And so we need to see them to units that are coming along faster than ever before, because they are. It's just that would be great. So I think it's the community to use both force policy proposals to turn this thing back. Or turn it off, ideally, right? But like, at least we can stop the flood of coming into your experience of homelessness. We're going to have a lot better chance in supporting the people who are currently experiencing homelessness.
Develop the system that is being stood up and is
no, it's true. It's just Gensburger on the film that I've ever seen assessment we've written about it.
Yeah, in total, makes sense of all the reasons. So, and I think the topic of our state might have stopped me for the emergency,
but that is really important exponentially in about a dozen.
I mean, the population of service is potentially two,
and so kind of having
both, like, how do you end up finding like those are
level set hosts,
you know, maybe that the scenario is quite easy. You are unsheltered now, who's going to turn you on the voice or say, hey, I'm doing this, and is there a way to support them?
You have something here, so we have scratching with friends, or give them money.
But you know, people are really interested in high stability,
second-highest state in the country,
but just maybe haven't risen to awareness of the system. You know, they may even qualify as homeless now, but maybe they're not on And I think another thing that is really bold and
list is like, I used to have savings
and have visas and who are approaching eviction. And I think that would be especially when they're having available to us as we wrap up here in Congress. And I think that, and again, I was maybe
and all those vacation homes
in Mount Lee, but I think that is you have to step on driver
lake homes that are
to the system and then coming here is people who are reaching a point.
I do could be a part of that bigger assessment,
but I do think that Shannon said that have been staged because people start to.
Does that change?
So again, it concerns me. How do you divert people who are maybe on the table and yourself when you go with a friend, there's only going to be some disarrangement and this heat does a lot to down around the eviction option.
And
some address and people who are out in pieces right now, but may not be a
So we do have some numbers based on the most rural areas and the impact on the universal housing workers.
Just so we don't think of those and huge drawbacks there is not the disability and it's only in the space, especially when I suggest it. One time we that's the encouragement. All of us are part of the units and that's, you know, I don't want to say
I think it would be really helpful, like, to come up with, like, a 9-4-8 who is already doing that, which you have to do more at. What the barriers for them are, what they can be, but they don't have you know, what they do, where they desire, and of course,
what do want?
How would we do
it? Yes, because I remember, you know,
legislature has chosen the traditional government roles at a municipal level, and given the municipalities the ability to hear the names.
Please,
Holly Mason
was that
we're seeing that
as a good. But do you Does that make sense for us to look at the VCCI for Tulsa and hotels, or is that all taken? There's nobody left for I mean, I remember that we had
I think it needs to be put in quite a number of things, though. It's high significant medical. Which advice? I'm going to try to really ask the question. I'm just saying, but I'm still saying the same in New Orleans chair. It is
something that you know. And something that you know. It's
been years. That makes your mind. It's a significant.
Well, I'm just wondering what you know, what I say, whether our son can get a spiritual mistake and it's like we don't get a lot of rash again. Things like short term rental too much. Unless the guys are thinking that's what we're talking about, we won't want to because the shelter should be longer than the other programs that is going to help these issues. Stores have been getting on for we were also in the resorts. We've been being more
closing. I was asking a question because I was actually listening to some cast in the way of the exchange. It was about short term rental doors, just kind of saying that. Hotels are eaten by a person who took them slow. It's 15%. But so, what is the not?
Essentially, what we created were open air markets.
They booked for like 2 years.
Well, that's the parking lot expense. So essentially, we have to consider what the society is saying. We're looking at calls, managing something. We have set up a meeting list and we're
proposing. We thought we were going to see about
that's very much impacted the SUV population.
That's one of those unintended conversations between me and you.
Well, certainly it was predicted. One of the things that might not be popular to say out loud, but I'm going to say that we do have to consider the number of elements that we don't have in our housing or the people who are preying on people that you were just speaking of.
Well, we're all
and, you know, I know the Decker Towers of Burlington, they were just talking about this, and it's been an issue with the people where, it's an issue in all the hotels.
One of the things that
comes to my mind. You know, some of the conversions of the hotels to single occupancy. And, you know, I think that we need to be realistic and we need to understand that there are criminal elements at play. And so all of the good that we try to do, we have to understand how to figure out what to do about that criminal element. And, you know, there isn't any law enforcement on this council or any state's attorneys. I'd love to hear what Sarah George has to say about this because Chittenden County is a... People go to Chittenden County because they don't think they're going to be prosecuted. I mean, they won't be arrested because police won't arrest because they know they're not going to be prosecuted. And so, you know, it's all over the state, but it is a hotbed in Chittenden County right now. I hear about it every single day. I feel like we need to reach out to the law enforcement, the judiciary, all of that is part of this. So,
I can say for are any of the suggestions for required reading, so I guess the room has to be less than
other things that we should all get on the same person, have a common understanding of
before this week's.
There's a
regular
and city state emergency
check. So I think it's first.
Federal plan. I think there's already a lot of it's from all land. It's the United States Emergency Council.
We can circulate the roadmap and link to the map. To what extent we can provide information, we provide plenty of data on the GA housing program. And as far as shelters, is there a set up that is a little far more than a lot of minutes?
To be really grounded, what are the parameters of homelessness prevention for December versus today? We've sort of made a distinction of like some other planning for later because I feel like I could just. Maybe overwhelm the group with eventually. I also, a few years ago, and I was meeting with Purdue kind of pilot grant, which I'm going to talk to looking at adjusted support on the spending. I don't know if you want to look at it and see if you can feel relevant and potentially send to the group, but they did specific eviction prevention work and made several recommendations. And again, you heard some of the stuff. Vermont Legal, we opened up a pilot for in terms of where I'm at on changing some support work on eviction prevention.
That's one of the things that we just had.
I can send it to you, just so you want to make sure.
Lack can change in 2 years. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I think from a planning perspective, the executive order goes to December 31st of 2034. And so we've got a task in front of us for 12/31/2023. And that sort of limits us to the subcommittees that really hones us in. But then we have an opportunity. We're not limited to two subcommittees for this task. Right? So I think there is an opportunity to process this where we think a lot more strategically and as long term if we come to this.
Yeah, absolutely. This is something for a document sharing.
And I think that there is an opportunity to speak on behalf of the shares, but I think this is about the night where I was in some like strategic
version
what are we as a group trying to do? Where are we going? And then how do we create the right subcommittee structure underneath that broader what? To the degree that we can, yes, I see this couple of things. The executive order does go on to say that each year we'll provide an update to this initial deliverable by the end of September. And so we can, over time, we can sort of broaden it.
I know from a legislative perspective, we are sort of hoping mass exodus of unhoused from hotels. I don't know what the solutions are, but I really don't. But I think that's part of the impetus for this council. That's on purpose. In the administration, they're thinking about what's going to happen already. Being able to give and take about what some of those ideas are, what that might cost, and where we might be come next spring. Because we are also going to be faced with this push from all of us.
Yeah.
the short term to prevent that as much as we are able to do it. And I agree with whoever said we're not. I don't think we're going to be able to prevent it from because people now are choosing because they're required to pay their 30%. They're choosing to lose for the first 9 or 10 days that should go back, you know, if their room is still vacant because they don't want to spread that. Do I think Maine is a realistic expectation? Yes, that's probably the Vermonter kind of thing. I do think you're contributing to your cost if you're, you know, it's 30% of whatever you have for income. If your income's very low, it's going to be a low amount. So anyway, I think that looking forward, I think David just said, I do agree that, you know, we can expand further, but I think this is really looking at what is going to happen in the spring and what do we need to do now. I mean, frankly, start doing now, even before December, to try to prevent a sort of a mass unhousing.
I think that's right. I think the trick is to balance it in the idea of preventing folks from becoming homelessness, the language struggles, and sort of, and how do we wrestle, you know, with those things.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a clarification that I think you're trying to grapple with. The language says prevent homelessness, but are we really talking about preventing them sheltering homelessness? And so if people are sheltered right now in the June cohort through April, is that part of our concern that this group that will happen in April? So if the word unsheltered needs to be added to that.
So I think my understanding of the intention was that if this wasn't focused on the crisis response system for this deliverable, but it was focused on preventing people from entering homelessness and the crisis. I mean, if we're honest, I think we could really, the crisis response system could take a lot of oxygen out of the room, right? Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. And as it should, and I think it is due its attention. I question how effective we can be in the rest of the world with the crisis response system being a part of that.
So, I mean, I think that's an important clarification because that's in the Constitution you were sort of alluding to might be throughout somewhere else.
Well, I think it is happening in other places. Right. It is happening in other places. I just think that, you know, we all need to be aware that there's another dynamic that's at play.
I just wanted to reiterate, I think, what Paul was getting at earlier, that it does seem like there's maybe a step before that's inherent in this deliverable, which is to get a broader sense of numbers. You know, we do a similar inventory process with this committee that the other committees in order to, and maybe that's not by December 31st, but it seems to be foundation about, you know, all the different programs and people in the different states of homelessness. There's,
I think it's harder to identify those who are at risk of homelessness, like, you know, and that's where maybe even calling in the judiciary or really, again, those who have like eviction hearings going up, you know, that kind of thing, we would need other data sources for that. I think there's limited data on that in the housing management information system. I'm not sure if Chittenden right now captures any of those who are at risk. So I think that population, I think there's a lot of data of those who are homeless. I think there's less data of those who are at risk. And it would have to come from other sources. I mean, I think we can look back to see some of the case management numbers maybe from our program. But just again, that because some people, right, they might not even raise their hand, so to speak, the same way that someone who is actively homeless is just a little more visible and participating. So I just wanted to.
And so there are other departments, like Dale, for instance, I know has funding priorities around people with disabilities who are at risk of homelessness. So, you know, that's a way to secure
funding, long-term funding for support. So reaching out to other sister departments might also be helpful in trying to identify the people at risk.
Does HMIS have, does that record information about the cause of homelessness for each individual in the system? Can we look at that and extrapolate what are the causes of homelessness? And then kind of as a subcommittee, look forward at what we see as systematic risks for increasing homelessness, like the end of DGRAP and when those evictions will start coming into the system. So kind of a two-pronged approach to this analysis. One that looks at what are the causes in the current homeless population, say those are risks moving forward for others, and then what are systematic risks that are going to come down.
Seems like having those point in terms of...
You might be able to, so one thing, Dave, that maybe you could send out is the AHS definition of at-risk of homelessness, because I think that's also helpful, too, is we have an AHS agreed-upon definition, and that is agreed-upon with the continuous care. Other people in their heads might also then define other people at-risk who don't meet this definition. So I think maybe that was Will's point earlier, too, is that a policy change that the group wants to recommend in terms of like broaden those who are categorically defined as at risk and potentially increase supports for them. So that might be helpful. And then the one thing that they might have, if you look at the at risk, you have to be below a certain income. I'm sure you don't have access to resources, but then you can be in a series of, I don't know, states, for instance. Mm-hmm. So you can be like doubled up. You could be paying for a motel yourself. So they might capture that, like how, which sort of maybe probably gets to your question, or at least could identify where people are. But then again, people who are eviction, that's like a totally, you know.
But yeah, kind of, I think I was not being precise with at risk there. I mean, I was thinking of the people who are doubled up, the people who are effectively homeless, who then might be, shelter imminently, you know, folks who are a little further.
Yeah, and again, because you could have folks who are in eviction court for eviction, but because of their income, they wouldn't be defined on the AHS definition. So I think things like that are important for people to be aware of, and just again, to shape the conversation. You have to look at maybe multiple first.
So we're at time and when people don't think you to. Kristen will be in touch about scheduling a meeting. I don't know what folks' preferences are as to how far you're traveling, when you want to try to be in person, or if you want to have everybody online. The mix can sometimes be difficult. I guess depending on when it is, we can determine whether people communicate in person or not, whether you're both involved.
We decided on weekly meetings?
Yes.
An hour
and a half? I'm open up to the group here. What's how much work do you think we have ahead of us versus how much time we can possibly put to this?
I don't know.
It's probably an hour. Start always early if we don't.
Yes, absolutely.
It works. And if you have any thoughts about the upcoming agenda, feel free to email me or Kristen. We'll try to get a draft out for everybody so you can see what you think might be helpful. And then also any reading materials you think the committee can benefit from and pay for some of those part of the way at the time. They gather some data to share with the subcommittee.
And there's been a bunch loaded into the chat, so feel free to look back on that as a reference.
Great. Thank you, everyone. I appreciate it. It's important for us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have never
some stuff they want.
Right.